Well, good morning, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. It's great to see both of you today. And as another virtual meeting of the Board of Public Works, with the announcement from the State House Trust that we're going to be opening the State House effective Friday, this is probably going to be our last virtual meeting unless we get to the winter and have a snowstorm, because now we know we can do this virtual as long as we have power in our home. So we could still have a meeting if we, let's say, a snowstorm. I don't want to say a hurricane, because then power is usually out. So we'll be welcoming everybody back to the state house probably for our next meeting, I would expect. Let me just give a brief update on the COVID-19 and the vaccination progress. To date, there have been more than 5.6 million doses of the vaccine administered across the state. Right now, 66.6, as of yesterday, I think it was, 66.6% of adults 18 and older have received at least one shot. Our case rate and positivity rates are both at the lowest levels they've been since the beginning of the pandemic. The positivity rate is at 2.2% statewide. Case rate is 6.2 cases per 100,000 people. Our hospitalizations are down. You know, so progress is taking place, and it shows that the vaccines are effective in stopping the spread of the virus. And we believe that the vaccinations are critical to returning to the pre-pandemic life that we've all once enjoyed. Maryland is now administering the Pfizer vaccine to young people 12 and up who want to get vaccinated. This is in line with the guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And I just want to say it's, you know, we're trying to encourage as many people as possible to get vaccinated. We're really in a race against the variants. And the more people that we who are able to get vaccinated, the better protected we'll all be. And the less this virus will spread and potentially mutate. So anyone who's watching this live stream this morning who haven't gotten vaccinated, please do. And if you know someone who is holding out, ask them to reconsider and please get vaccinated. That's the best way for us to get back to a sense of normalcy. It is easy. You can get vaccinated at many of the walk-in mass vaccination sites that we have around the state. As well as through appointments. There are 13 mass vac sites around. There are some 300, or I'm sorry, more than 700 pharmacies, local hospitals, the county health departments, all are providing vaccines, and as well as primary care doctors are providing it as well. People can go to covidvax.maryland.gov. To get information on vaccine providers near them, or they can call 1-855-MD-GOVAX to get that information as well. Before moving to the agenda, I want to present a governor's citation, and I want to just take this time during the meeting to recognize a state employee and first responder who displayed extraordinary heroism this month on the Chesapeake Bay. On May 6, a 30-foot boat capsized. Three people were pulled from the water by Anne Arundel County and Annapolis fireboats. Excuse me. When Natural Resource Police Officer First Class Brian Hunt arrived, he was told that there was a fourth person, the ship's captain, who had knocked on the hull and could still be alive. Officer Hunt went into the water without a wetsuit in hopes of saving the individual's life. He found the person was conscious, helped him find an air pocket, gave him a piece of scuba equipment and took steps necessary to physically pull him out of the boat where he was trapped. Officer Hunt saved the life of this man. The individual was taken to the hospital with symptoms of hypothermia and released the very next day. So I'd like to present a governor's citation to Officer Hunt. And it reads, be it known that on behalf of the citizens of this state, in recognition of a grateful tribute to commend you for your courageous response to a life-threatening emergency situation on May 6, 2021, upon arriving at the scene of a capsized boat in the Chesapeake Bay, in honor of your deliberate actions and disregarding your own safety by immediately diving into the water to find and free a man who was trapped below the water surface. And as our citizens join together in expressing our deep appreciation for your heroic efforts during this successful rescue, we're pleased to confer upon you this governor's citation, signed this day by Governor Lawrence J. Hogan Jr., myself, as well as the Secretary of State. So I just want to again say thank you on behalf of a grateful nation. And Officer Hunt, we will get this to you so that you can hopefully put it in a nice place and be able to tell your family and friends and remind you, you know, of the appreciation of the state for all that you did.
What a terrific story. A terrific one. 2 weeks ago, to save someone's life, that's the greatest reward. But this is, I remember reading in the paper, this is extraordinary. I mean,
it's like what you see in the movies or on television, you know, where someone dives in and, you know, pulls someone out of a capsized vessel. I think all of us, except for the secretary, remembers the old TV show Sea Hunt with Lloyd Bridges. So, mm-hmm. But Madam Secretary, thank you. And please give our best regards to Officer Hunt.
Thank you very much. And he's actually on the line.
Oh, okay. Oh, great.
Hey, could he? I was going to ask that, but could he describe what exactly he did also?
Lieutenant Governor, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I appreciate you having me. First of all, I'd just like to humbly say I appreciate the recognition and award. Although I believe the actions may have been deemed heroic and courageous, I would like to save that definition of hero for the men and women in uniform who have paid the ultimate price for serving, and they're the true heroes. So there was a lot of other departments and officers out there that day, and I just happened to be at the right place at the right time, and thank God that you know, the actions of everybody saved a life. You know, being a member of the dive team for NRP for over 5 years, I've seen a lot of tragic things, and to finally rescue somebody, it was pretty good. 99% of the time we're recovering, and that's just a negative part of the business of what we do. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I humbly appreciate this on behalf of our department. And it's a pleasure to put the uniform on every day and serve the great people of Maryland. I'm a lifelong resident of Maryland, and I've been on the water all my life. And it's just it's great to give back to the state what I've taken from. So thank you very much for letting me serve.
Thank you.
Officer Hunt, yeah, this is Peter Franchot, the comptroller. So did you actually dive under the water and help this individual? Was it something that was out just floating, capsized, or?
Yes, sir. What I didn't know was there was actually a boat collision in the middle of the bay. If you can just imagine being, just for a second, just imagine being somebody trapped in a overturned boat for at least 50 minutes in the cold water. So anyway, I was all the way down at Deal at the time, and Deal, Maryland, and I made my way to Sandy Point, where I had a boat waiting for me. And on the way, I passed Anne Arundel County dive team, which was en route. And I thought to myself, well, that's strange. I thought they would have been out there by then. but they were on the way and I knew it, but I got to Sandy Point. I jumped on a boat. I had enough common sense to grab a tank and a flashlight. And when I got to the scene, the fire department had the boat secure. It was capsized. 3/4 of it was under the water. And they said they could hear the person knocking on the hull of the boat. So I said, well, I'm going to get in the water. I dropped my gun belt, jumped in with my uniform on, and put my tank on, had my flashlight, and went underneath. And I could see that he was in a dire position. He literally, like you said, just like the movies, had about 6 inches worth of air he was holding on to life. Oh. And I got up beside him, and the best I could do, I gave him my second stage off my scuba PC, and I felt him take air from my tank. So I knew he was in, he was alive and he's conscious. I was holding his hand, and luckily he was wearing a life jacket, believe it or not. I've seen so many tragic things, and it's usually related to not having a life jacket, but that's, I think the life jacket kept him up in that air pocket, and it took God's strength to pull him out. But when I did, at some point, I think the regulator may have came out of his mouth, but he shot right up to the surface, and Anne Arundel County Fire Board took over from there, and we saved the life. So, you know, I'm just trying to remain humble. I believe, it's not one person's actions. It was definitely multi-agency. We have a lot. We have thousands of officers all over the state every day that put the uniform on, and you know, some don't come home at the end of the day. So it's very humbling.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And Memorial Day is coming up, and appreciate your comments about folks in uniform.
Yes, truly.
Thank
inspiring.
You. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. It's truly inspiring, and the effort. I was going to ask if you were in gear, but you were in your uniform. You dropped your belt and dived in. You still have your boots on when you went in?
I did. Yeah, I did. The water was a cool 63 degrees, and luckily I have plenty of experience diving in cold water at the plunges. So. So it all paid off. I'm very thankful for the training that I've had. This department has allowed me to do something I love to do, and I'm just looking forward to every day that I put this uniform on. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much, and we'll get this citation down to you to make sure that you at a later point, years from now, you'll look back at it when some memories start to fade, and you can remember. You know how much the state and the people of Maryland appreciate your efforts and really the efforts of all law enforcement officers who go beyond the call of duty almost every day. So thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the other comments from the panel. Thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you. All right. With that, I'll turn to my colleagues, Madam Treasurer.
Good to be here. Look forward to 2 weeks from now. If we are together, then that's terrific. I think that we've learned a lot in the last year. And I hope Governor and Comptroller, as we go back together again, we don't lose some of those lessons. What is really essential? What functions are really essential? How we all really are, I believe, in the same boat, even though we might have come on different ships. I hope we don't get immersed in the way it used to be, but still looking forward to it. And I wish you happy spring.
Happy spring. Mr. Comptroller.
Yes, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I certainly associate myself with your remarks about vaccines. I'm trying to think of something that rhymes with taxes, and I think of vaxes. So we have to have more vaccines, and hopefully people will respond to your message and Governor Hogan's and everyone else's and does the right thing. And Madam Treasurer, I agree with you. I think there are lots of lessons learned from the year plus that we've experienced. I wanted to mention to both of you that and please pass along to Governor Hogan. I think your aware that last month I announced the creation of the Comptroller's Workshop on Pandemic Spending. And we're going to provide oversight and a full accounting of the billions of federal dollars that have been funneled through Maryland over the last year. And I bring that in under the title that you kind of referenced, Madam Treasurer, which is what lessons have we learned? And that's the whole point of this workshop on pandemic spending. The unprecedented infusion of federal aid was critical, in my opinion, in staving off economic calamity. It was literally a lifeline to hundreds of thousands of Marylanders who found themselves out of a job, on the verge of losing their homes, and struggling to put food on the table. So I know, Lieutenant Governor, that our staffs have met. I want to thank you and your team, Madam Treasurer, also your folks who are involved for the commitment to work together on this very important initiative. As fiduciaries, I know everyone across state government agrees on the critical importance of oversight, accounting, and transparency, especially when we're talking about the expenditure of billions of dollars during an unprecedented emergency. Tomorrow, the workshop will hold its first meeting. We'll receive briefings from Deputy Secretary Mark Nicol of the Department of Budget and Management on the various pandemic relief programs established with state and federal dollars. I think this is going to be one of the first fully comprehensive reports by the Department of Budget and Management. We're also going to hear from Andy Schaffel, the head of the Bureau of Revenue Estimates, on the economic impact of state and federal pandemic relief programs in our state. Once again, I emphasize that we are focused on lessons learned. What worked? What didn't work? What can be improved? What can we do better should we ever get in this kind of a situation again? And as the Treasurer noted, I know she was referring to something else, which was kind of personal mental health and happiness, I guess. But this hopefully we'll learn some things about practices that we might want to continue that improve the situation from a fiscal standpoint. Anyway, I look forward to hearing the insights that they're going to share with us tomorrow. And I encourage everyone, if you have some spare time, to tune in on tomorrow's meeting. We will be conducting it virtually, but this will be our last virtual meeting. From here on out, after this one, we'll be in person. But tomorrow's meeting can be accessed via the Comptroller's Office social media web pages. Good luck finding them if you're like me and not particularly fluent, but call me if you need help getting on the exact page. But Lieutenant Governor, thank you for that. And thank you again for the administration's assistance in this. It's something the legislature mandated. So we're doing it. And I know the treasurer is interested and involved from a distance.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, transparency is always good. And, you know, and always, you know, process improvement is something that I feel is very important, that you look at your processes from time to time and see where you can improve. And so you have to sometimes look back at how things were done to see how you can do it better. That's one of the benefits, just on a very side note, when I was first an appointee in the federal government, I felt that, you know, the benefit, and really when I came into DGS, the benefit of the transition is hopefully you bring people in who ask the why questions. Why do you do it this way? Because, I mean, you're coming in fresh. You don't know the business per se. You don't know it to the detail level as the subject matter experts, but you ask the why questions. And I had a little placard that I that at DGS that said, if you answer because that's the way we always did it, you should get your head shaved immediately. but if you, and then I would say to them, but if you say this is the way we always did it because that's okay. This is the way we've always done it, but I don't think that's the best way. That's even better. You know, so it's, you know, it's good to look at this and so ask those why questions. With that, I'll turn it to Secretary Gontram for the Secretary's agenda.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. There are 15 items on the Secretary's agenda and 5 reports or merged procurements. Item 5 on the Secretary's agenda is being withdrawn at the request of the Title Wetlands License applicant. I'm happy to assist with answering any questions.
I only want to point out item 8, the budget amendment. It's in reference to reimbursement for media buy for senior call check program. That is a very good program administered by the Department of Aging and Secretary Kramer, that individuals can sign up for it, that where you have a senior who lives by themselves, that there's someone that just calls to check on them to see how they're doing. This was particularly important during the time of pandemic where you had so many people who were isolated. And so it's just checking on their well-being, both physically, but probably more so psychologically and mentally. So I just wanted to commend the Secretary for the program and the success that it has been. Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I did have one comment on A3, if I could. Mr. Gontram, is Mr. Gleason with us today, I hope? Bob Gleason, the...
Yes, Comptroller, I believe so.
So, colleagues on the board, I don't have any questions for this particular item, but it is an emergency contract coming to the board 6 months late. I assume this might be an appropriate time to ask Mr. Bob Gleason, the Chief Procurement Officer of the state, to provide a more detailed explanation to the board concerning the use of emergency procurement and agency's challenges in submitting it, those emergency procurements, to the board. This is something we brought up last meeting, Lieutenant Governor, and as you know, there's a 45-day statutory deadline. And I think I asked at that point or indicated that I thought it was a very serious problem. And Mr. Gleason said he was going to think about some additional insights. And I'd like to let him, if he has some information to share with us, I'd look forward to it if he's on there. Oh, there he is. Hi, Mr. Gleason. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Comptroller, Governor, Madam Treasurer. Good morning. For the record, Bob Gleason, Chief Procurement Officer. Yes, and thank you for that, Comptroller Francho. We did go back and talk with staff. And as I mentioned on the last call, it really sort of fell into the buckets of our processes as well as our training elements, what we do with our staff and technology, perhaps once we get a more mature system. As you know, the pandemic created significant issues and challenges for us. Above and beyond the pandemic, we also had our normal routine day-to-day duties, which you had to fulfill. But since that time, we can report that DGS has completed all of its emergency reports. We've queried everyone in the agency, and no further reports are forthcoming at this time. Hopefully no further emergencies from DGS. With regards to the agencies themselves, we don't have insight into the agency emergencies, and we can work on the processes and the training elements for the future. But looking backwards, what was it the Lieutenant Governor said? Memories fade. And, trying to go back to March, April, May, June, July of last year, it was truly the fog of war as we were trying to battle through acquiring these goods and services. So the delays, I'm not offering that as an excuse as much as just some context. And I think going forward, preparing for a pandemic type of response, we've got a lot of work to do. We've got to roll up our sleeves and figure that out. But I can tell you that we're working with our staff. We're going to be working with the board staff to try to address this in the future. And I hope that answers your question for the moment. But we're up to speed right now. We don't know what we don't know with regards to agencies that haven't reported. But as those come about, we plan to report those as quickly as we have them.
Can I interrupt just for a moment? One of the things that we've been discussing here, and I hope Bob, our staff, has talked to you about this, is utilizing email and marketplace advantage a lot more in terms of making sure that the agencies, because as you said, DGS doesn't know about, say, the health department's emergency until it's provided basically to the board and they send a copy to DGS. That using email and marketplace advantage, Emma, making sure that the agencies are recording that information on a timely basis or within a certain period of time. I'm proposing 5 business days that it be in Emma, and then that way there can be a tickler system put in that, say, 30 days out, it alerts your office to say, health department has this emergency procurement out there. They have 15 days to get that into the Board of Public Works. So that then that way there's a report that comes out that you can see. I know when we have, you know, pandemic type of emergencies, you may have a long list of these that come out, but at least we have an internal process that alerts us, but we have to make sure the agencies are putting that information in, which quite frankly, they should be able to do right away. You know, they make the award, they should be able to go to the system at the very least. If they make the award at 5:30 in the afternoon, the next morning they should be able to go back on the system and record it into email and marketplace. But I'd be nice and give them 5 business days to get it into the system. So I know that's something we've been discussing. I think Mark may have contacted you or about that as well.
Excellent. Governor, if I could say one more thing very quickly. Building this in the system is something that we've been working towards. We're actually meeting, I believe, this afternoon with the board staff in trying to have an introductory meeting in terms of getting a handle on all of the requirements that we need to develop into the system. So this is going to be a journey, so to speak. But your point, these are all data points, and getting the agencies to be able to put that in there ultimately should be a solution. But in the meantime, Mr. Comptroller, I do recall that, you know, we can take 20 minutes and get it to you as quickly as possible. But we have to train the agencies to be able to, you know, to get that done. So that's where we are.
Madam Treasurer. You need to train agencies to follow the law is what you're saying, I think.
And we have a lot of laws. Yes, you're right. We have to follow them and diligently. And it's a training issue. It's a compliance issue. One of the things I'll note about technology, if you can build the rules into the technology and people have to use it to get what they need, the rules are automatically baked into that system. So it helps with a risk management perspective. Back to transparency, we have the reports and analytics that emerge from that. And then we have better assurance, all the way around. So that's the path we're on right now.
That sounds great, but in the meanwhile, just following the law would be a good first step.
Thank you, Madam.
But at least Lieutenant Governor Mr. Gleason didn't say that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah, he didn't say that.
Yeah, no. I'm delighted to hear that you're going to make progress on it. If I know that the Lieutenant Governor really crafted a lot of the reorganization of state procurement. And I believe there's a $10 million budget and a personnel of 84 employees, Mr. Gleason, that you may be overseeing. If you need more resources, definitely ask. But I would urge exactly what the treasurer alluded to, which is as far as the Board of Public Works and the state statute, that's a special piece of responsibility that I think people need to realize the importance of. And to the extent you're doing that, and the Lieutenant Governor sounded like that was a good technical fix also. Obviously, we the status quo needed to be changed. It sounds like, Lieutenant Governor, the process is being changed.
Uh-huh. Yes.
In a positive way.
We also have policies, and we're having a procurement review group that are going out to the agencies to make sure and check their records to see that they're following the law and fulfilling the policies that we're putting in place.
Well, that's good because, you know, your office has been with us since October of 2019. Thanks again to the Lieutenant Governor and the legislature, but don't mess with the Board of Public Works, please. That would be a good message to everybody. Just get my message to us.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. My message is I work with the Board of Public Works.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm just going to point out one emergency A1. It was Jericho Baptist Church. They now operate under City of Praise. It was an emergency to lease space there for initially a COVID testing site. Again, right there in the shadow of FedEx Field where Washington football team plays. And because of the efforts of the governor's task force, equity task force led by General Burkett, the federal government and both HHS and the Office of the President noticed what we were doing with regard to reaching out to minority communities and approached us to participate. And then through some of the efforts with a joint contractor that the state has, as well as what the federal government is using, they were able to bring for the first time and use it as a model, the monoclonal antibody treatment to the same facility. So the people who were being tested for COVID, if they were found to be positive, they could immediately, particularly if they had underlying health conditions, start the monoclonal antibody treatment right there. And the monoclonal antibody treatment has been found to be 70% effective in keeping people out of a hospital and potentially dying. And so they could start that treatment right then and there. That could, you know, really reduce the negative impacts. And the federal government, the president's faith-based office wanted to use and are using that pilot as a pilot and a model for the rest of the country and what they want to deploy in other parts of the country. So I just wanted to point that out. It was really something that was exceptional. What started as just another effort on our part to reach certain communities got the attention of the federal government. And you know how large the federal government is. We get a call from HHS wanting to know about this and wanting to participate, and then a call from the White House faith-based office. They're not talking to each other, but both are talking to us. And we had to tell them, hey, we got a call from your colleague in the other area. But they were very excited about what we were doing and brought in this additional treatment. So we're very appreciative that they were paying attention.
Lieutenant Governor, how many people have been treated? Is there any?
I need to go back and find out. I went there when it was first opened, so I need to find out how many actually have been treated at that location with the monoclonal antibody treatment. But they were all set up and ready to go when I went over there, and they had just started. So we can find that information out, and we'll get it back to you.
Excellent.
Okay. Any other questions, comments on secretary?
Move approval if appropriate.
Okay, I think we're all in favor. Thank you. Okay. Department of Natural Resources.
Hi, good morning again, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. I just want to quickly thank you again for recognizing Officer Hunt and all of our natural resources police officers that serve such a unique mission and are such dedicated individuals. Thank you very much for doing that today. And with that, we have three items on our real property agenda today, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
I don't have any questions. I do want to thank you for joining us in Franklin Point State Park this past Monday, and with the American Federation on Suicide Prevention, Maryland chapter, and their Hike a Park program. I believe they're doing something today And just I want to point out for those, I didn't mention it earlier, but May is Mental Health Awareness Month, not just in Maryland, but across the country. And so we had a nice visit with the individuals from American Federation of Suicide Prevention, the Maryland chapter, and we hiked at Franklin State Park, which is a little more rustic, despite the fact that I sprayed the repellent. I did find a couple of ticks that evening, and so I hope I'll survive that. So just to let you know, if you do go to Franklin State Park, be prepared. So
yes.
Be overly prepared. Any other questions or questions for Secretary Hathaway Riccio?
Move approval if everyone's okay.
Three good projects. Second.
Okay, I guess we're all in favor.
Thank you very much.
Officially take a vote. Okay. University of Maryland.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. We have four items for your consideration this morning, and we are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, could you, Tom, just touch briefly on the Y Institute project?
Yes, Madam Treasurer, that's item 4RP, and it's a real property acquisition of 234 acres in Queen Anne's County. With me this morning by audio is Carlo Colella, who's Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer for the university, as well as Dan Ramia, who's retired Assistant Dean of the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources for the university. So they are available to discuss that.
I'm just curious. I understand the transfer, I think, but the use of the property, what will be done going out?
It will continue to be used for agricultural research, and it's also the location of the world famous Y. Angus herd, which was a gift to the university. And there's an auction every year of the cattle. They can speak to that more than I can.
The cattle or the gentleman could speak to it. Which one? Oh, I got confused.
Both Carlo and Daniel.
Oh, okay.
Are they?
Yes. thank you, Lieutenant Governor, Controller, and Treasurer. The land is currently leased. We currently lease that land through the university from Aspen Institute, which was part of.
Can you identify who's speaking?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Daniel Ramey, retired assistant dean from the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources.
Thank you.
So the closed herd is currently occupied on those lands now that are leased by the university from Aspen Institute. And with Aspen Institute dissolving their operation there in Queen Anne's County, they are gifting 330 acres to the university to continue the preservation of this closed herd. It's one of the only closed herds there are for genetic research. And the additional lands that we have before you for purchase are needed to continue to do the environmental research as well as the herd research, because those are lands that we are currently using. It will also continue to keep those as an open space agricultural lands, and they are along the Y River, so it protects the natural resources of the Y River as well. And I believe back in March, on the 23rd, you approved two conservation easements that are in effect on these lands currently.
So essentially, it'll be maintained going into the future as it's been used thus far.
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay. And that's written in the law somewhere or written into an agreement somewhere.
Yes, there is an agreement of covenants and restrictions which was a modification prior to Nina Houghton's death of the potential use of those lands. So they are, through that document, as well as the MET documents, the conservation easements, they are protected from any subdivision or building in the future. The only building are designated, two designated building areas, and that would be for research purposes only. If we needed like a cattle weighing station or something along those lines.
And the conference centers, what's happening with the conference center?
So there are two conference centers. One was the Houghton House, and the other is called the River House. That's how they're identified. The Houghton House is in the middle of the two lands, what the university is being gifted, as well as what we're hoping to purchase. And a Paul Newman nonprofit, Hole in the Wall Gang, is in the process of purchasing those two conference centers. And what they do is they provide camping and natural resource experience for severely ill children. So they're looking to get into the area of Children's Hospital, also draw from Philadelphia. So that's why they're very interested in a presence in this area. And if any of you have been in that area, you know how beautiful those lands are.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. I appreciate that. That makes me feel, makes us all, I'm sure, feel much better about the future of the properties. But
it does.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions, university agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
All right, they're all in favor. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maryland Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 10 items for your consideration today. Item 10S is being withdrawn, leaving 9 for your consideration. Myself, as well as representatives, are here to answer any questions that you may have.
Do we have any questions for the transportation agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. Thank you. It sounds like we're all in favor, Secretary Slater. All right. Have a good day. B, Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary of the Department of General Services. Today, we are presenting 60 items for your consideration, and we are withdrawing items 12 and 42. Should it please the board, we do have one offer of public comment for item one, and representatives are on available to answer questions that you may have at this time.
Okay, yeah, I do want to talk about one CGL, and I believe Santo Grande has signed up from Delmarva Community Services, Inc., and to talk about the intergenerational facility that's being built there in Cambridge.
Good morning, Governor and Comptroller and Madam Treasurer. Good to be here, Secretary Churchill. We're very happy with your support of the project over the years, and you've been very good to us. And the program and building is coming into its final stretch. So we're hoping that it would be done by the end of the summer and into September, and we're looking for a grand opening in September. We are right now doing a lot of the finishing work. We will do the punch list probably in August, and we should be ready to go in September. But we're looking forward to inviting you all down to see the project. We really feel it's nice for people to come while it's being constructed, because there's so many, you know, various contractors in the building, you know, doing all the fine work and everything. So we're really looking forward to having a beautiful building, a very special building that'll serve children and seniors together. And we think this really a magnificent way to begin the future in Dorchester County in Cambridge, Maryland. And we couldn't have done it without your support. And we really, really appreciate all the support you've given us over the last few years with this project. It couldn't have been finished without your help. So thank you so much for everything you've done for us.
Well, thank you, Santo. I think I'm scheduled to come down there and see the progress that has taken place in another week or two. But we'll definitely talk to you further about it. And yes, I remember when you first brought this to our attention and your desire and plans to do it. And I know we ran into an acceleration of steel prices and a number of things that popped up in between, but I'm glad that it is, you know, rising and will be open by September.
We hope so. We know it'll be completed by the end of the summer. So, okay. And we're looking forward to seeing you on June 7th.
All right, great.
Can I just chime in also, Lieutenant Governor, because I've been down and visited Mr. Grande's empire down in on the lower shore, which is a fabulous accomplishment by Mr. Grande. But he also somehow had the wisdom to hire Andy Hollis, who was a former administrator of Talbot County. And he's the father-in-law of our secretary, John Gontram. The father of my Board of Public Works leader right now.
Emily. Sounds a little incestuous, but...
it's all good, because this is lots of talent. And Santo, I just want to say that this intergenerational community center that you're building is futuristic. And I hope that the state of Maryland publicizes it not only to the other counties and other regions of the state, but also nationally, because I think you're on to something with having older folks and younger folks collaborating together. And I think the benefit is not just to the younger folks from the experiences of the older folks, but the older folks get new energy and enthusiasm from being connected to the generations that are coming after them. Good job.
We hope that works for our staff also, really, because...
Yeah. I'm thinking of... I'm getting older myself, so I'm thinking of, joining at the...
Well, we'll always have a nice meal ready for you to come down to, and we'll serve you in our nice dining area that overlooks the woods and everything, so it's a beautiful setting. And we really are happy with it, and we look forward to you coming down. Comptroller, you're always welcome. You know that.
Thank you.
And Madam Treasurer, we'd love to see you come down to Dorchester County someday.
We'll be there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. And Lieutenant Governor, I look forward to seeing you in June.
So. Okay. Very good.
Thank you
for your support.
Thank you. I'm going to mention 27 CGL from the standpoint that I had the pleasure of going out to the Warrior Canine Connection facility in Upper Montgomery County a couple of weeks ago, holding the puppies that are there to, assist the wounded warriors who come back and those and first responders, those who may be suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And they do wonderful work there. They're on natural resource property. And there's more work to be done in terms of the physical plant. But it's, they're doing great work and talking to a couple of the volunteers there who in some cases have lost a child in the war, and this is part of their therapy, is to help other folks who come back and that may have some damage associated with their time in the war. So I just wanted to point out this worthwhile organization, and they do take volunteers and they do take support. So thank you. Any other questions or any questions for?
I would just like to say, because I was contacted, as I think we all were, from the legislators from District 47A, Senator Augustine, Delegates Fennell and Ivy, about project number 16, the American Legion project in District 47A, that it is going ahead. It is strong, and it's going to be completed soon. And I just want to thank them for their support, their encouragement, and the folks of Chevrolet benefit significantly.
Okay.
Thank you for that. I think I gave a William Donald Schaefer Award to the Canine Warrior group.
You're trying to remember?
Yes. Check out if it's still on the wall if you're visiting out there. I don't know.
Okay.
Sometimes I put those things in the basement. But I just wanted to comment on item 35 and then very briefly on 38. 35, I frankly want to salute the Hogan administration for highlighting apprenticeship programs. I consider these apprenticeship programs around the state to be a pathway to the middle class for people to get out of just dead-end situations that they're in and get on the path to stable careers and good paying jobs and et cetera, especially now with the pandemic. They play a big role. And I wonder, I'm not sure whether it's the Secretary of Labor or whether it's Secretary Churchill, but if somebody could just comment briefly on what the administration is doing, particularly if they're working with the building trades that are obviously good vehicles to partner with in this effort to broaden the middle class, I guess, is the way to describe it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Comptroller. I believe we have Assistant Secretary Jim Ruskowski, who is a part of the Division of Workforce Development and Adult Learning on the line, as well as Sarah Kalush, who is the outreach manager for that business unit.
So the question would be, are you working together with the building trades in addition to the private sector as far as the apprenticeship programs? It's a friendly question.
Is Jim on? Jim?
Jim, you're muted.
Unmute. There we go. Now can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you very much for the question and comment, Mr. Comptroller, Mr. Governor. Madam Treasurer, for the record, Jim Repkowski, Assistant Secretary of Labor with oversight over the Division of Workforce Development and Adult Learning. And thank you, Mr. Comptroller, for calling out this item. The Hogan administration is very, very proud of our scaling up of registered apprenticeship over the last 7 years. This particular contract item is our effort to continue to outreach to young people to show that there is an alternative career path to something that they may only hear in high school is you have to go to college. We received over the last 6 years over $12 million of federal competitive grants from the U.S. Department of Labor Office of Apprenticeship. And we are continuing to outreach to individuals to share with them what registered apprenticeship is all about. It's a job on day one. It's related instruction. It's on the job training, leading to very good sustainable wages and great jobs, both in the traditional skilled trades as construction, but also in non-traditional occupations such as healthcare, cybersecurity, logistics, manufacturing. We currently have an all-time record high of registered apprentices in the state of Maryland, over 11,000, and that is the highest we've had on record. So we are very proud of our accomplishment. And one of the interesting things here is we want to reach young people. Where do young people go? They go to the Maryland Motor Vehicle Administration to get their driver's license, which is often one of the entry requirements for an apprenticeship program. And while MVA is very efficient, we know they're going to be sitting there for at least a few minutes, and hopefully they and their parents will see this opportunity to a career path in many industries, not just the construction trades, but also healthcare, cybersecurity, banking, so many other industries that we've grown over the last few years.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Jim, that's good. Very good.
I have one other question about item 38S. This is a request from the Department of Human Services to retroactively approve a one-year contract with the Devereux Foundation in Florida to provide out-of-state residential care, child care services for an eight-year-old Maryland youth. And obviously, it's a unique placement. Frankly, I'm just a little concerned about not the child and the situation, but more with the company, because it has a previous history of on some unfortunate abuse and misconduct. And I hope that the agency is arranged for, I won't go into the details of what they're accused of, but if Secretary James is there, Deputy Secretary James, I assume you're aware of the allegations of the company and you've taken care to place this particular eight-year-old in a safe facility, and you're going to supervise and visit and make sure that the proper care is received.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. This is Greg James, Deputy Secretary for Operations at the Maryland Department of Human Services, for the record. Thank you for the question, Mr. Comptroller. I have with me this morning our executive director for our Social Services Administration, as well as our deputy executive director, Tenille Thomas. And I apologize, our executive director is Michelle L. Farr. And I believe she can speak to the process that we go through for vetting these programs, as well as our regular and intensive oversight that we exercise to ensure the safety of all youth in out-of-state placements.
I guess not to interrupt, Deputy Secretary, I don't necessarily, I understand the difficulties that you operate under, but were you guys aware of these allegations, and have you dealt in your internally to just make sure these kids are, this particular child that we're voting on today or approving a one-year contract for, if they're safe and they're not going to have any kind of physical, sexual, verbal abuse in any way?
So, Mr. Comptroller, we do carefully screen all of our placements and review those, and we make regular reviews after the placements are made to ensure that it continues to be an appropriate placement. Many programs have incidents in their background, and what we look for usually is whether that program took the appropriate corrective steps and how the hosting state, the licensing state, is viewing this program at this time, since they were the ones that would have directly investigated the incidents. So I can assure you we carefully monitor all of these. Anytime we see a report of the nature, and I have seen the reports regarding incidents at Devereux, we do carefully follow up and ensure that we are still confident that it's an appropriate placement for the child. And certainly we do monitor it more closely when we have these types of concerns.
Excellent. Well, that's, if you could just keep us in the loop, that would be great.
Absolutely, sir.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Okay, any other questions on the general services agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, we're all in favor.
Thank you, Secretary.
And thank everyone, all the board members, treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. I imagine next time that there's one of these meetings, it will be in person here in the State House again.
You're saying, Governor, next month in Annapolis.
Next month in Annapolis, yes, yes. Versus next year in Jerusalem. So thank you. All right. Well, thank you. Have a good rest of the day.
Same to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.